And I'm going to also explain a little bit of the other tradition that a Jewish people do today, have been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years. But there's two or three traditions that were around even during the time of Jesus. And we'll look and see how those traditions Jesus used to point to himself.
Proclaiming God's love and truth for you and your family. Wonder Lake Bible Church.
As I said, we do have Stephen Ilchishin with Chosen People Ministries and his wife Jennifer with us. And Stephen is going to lead us in this presentation called Messiah in the Passover so that we can better understand our faith, the Jewish roots of our faith, and see Messiah in the Passover. So Stephen, would you come forward, please?
Good morning, everybody. I'm very happy to be here. I'm always extra excited about the Messiah and the Passover presentations because it gives me a chance to share a little bit of my story, too. Because I was at a Passover Seder held by an Israeli friend of mine that I came to faith in Jesus as the Messiah. So sharing this journey with you is always something very special to me. And we're going to be partaking of the communion. And I will show you how one portion, one part of the Passover Seder, or the order, Seder means order, the Passover order meal, one particular portion of it is what's taken by the church and called the Lord's Supper or Communion. But before we begin that, I'm going to also explain a little bit of the other traditions that a Jewish people do today, have been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years. Well, there's two or three traditions that were around even during the time of Jesus. And we'll look and see how those traditions Jesus used to point to himself. And I'm going to be using what's called a Haggadah, or the telling. So this book is a Messianic Haggadah, and it's a Messianic telling of the story of Passover. And it talks about the spiritual and the physical redemption of the Jewish people. And Passover, imbued in Passover, there are spiritual expectations of Messiah. And we'll see those things, too, as we point them out. But the Haggadah is what I'll be using to take you guys through the Passover experience. And I'm going to be reading liturgy and scripture and all sorts of stuff that normally would be done in a Jewish household. Only, of course, we're going to, you know, infuse them with a Messianic flavor, and we're going to make sure we point out those things that point to Messiah Jesus. So, one of the second most important Passover in history is recorded in the Gospels, and I'm going to share that with you right now. Then came the day of the unleavened bread on which the Passover lamb has to be sacrificed. Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, "Go make preparations for us to eat the Passover." "Where do you want us to prepare it?" he asked. Jesus replied, "As you enter the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him to the house that he enters, and say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large upper room, all furnished. Make preparations there." They left and found the things just as Jesus had told them, and so they prepared the Passover. And this term prepared is repeated numerous times in each time that the Gospels record disciples going to find the upper room. And there is some preparation that goes on to start a Passover Seder. One of those things is removing leaven from the house. And in a traditional Jewish home, the ceremony would look something like this. The mother of the family would gather all the leaven products, anything that has yeast in it, and the more traditional households would get rid of anything that puffs up, so food like rice. Because the rabbis tell us that this holiday is solely about what God did for the Jewish people. And anything that puffs up, you know, should be ceremoniously taken out of the house. So we are not puffed up when we're celebrating this. So all leaven products, anything that puffs up, is taken out of the house. Sometimes it's given to a Gentile neighbor to hold until the Passover is over. In my house, Jen and I usually, whatever not eaten, is given to a food pantry. But all leaven has to be rid. Just get rid of all leaven. And the idea is the Torah, the Bible, and the New Testament often make the correlation between sin and yeast. Jesus tells his disciples to beware of the yeast of the Pharisees, which he later explains as their hypocrisy. And Paul, later on in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 5, writes two passages about yeast. And the first passage is in 5, 6 through 8. And Paul writes the following: "Your boasting is not good. Don't you know that a little yeast works through the whole batch of dough? Get rid of the old yeast that you may be a new batch without yeast as you really are. For Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us keep the festival of Passover, not with the old yeast, the yeast of malice and wickedness, but with the bread without yeast, the bread of sincerity and truth." And later, in 11:28, Paul writes, "A man ought to examine himself before he eats of the bread and drinks of the cup." The idea is that we come clean before God when we come before his table and celebrate what he did for us. So now that all the leavened products are out of the house, we need to get the kids involved. The rabbis say that each person has to celebrate Passover as if he himself or herself is coming out of Egypt. So the way you get the kids involved in an Orthodox Jewish household is the mother would leave a little bit of leaven somewhere on a windowsill, on top of a refrigerator, on a table, and the father would take the kids on a leaven hunt. And they would find that little piece of leaven, put it in a handkerchief, and if it's a traditional Orthodox home, there usually would be a community bonfire. And they would go to that community bonfire, say a prayer, throw the leaven in the fire, proclaiming that their house is ritually pure to celebrate Passover. Then they would come to the house, and it would be 40 minutes or so before sunset, and they would begin the Passover Seder. But before any Jewish holiday can begin, the time has to be set apart. Judaism focuses on sacred time and sacred space. This Passover table is the altar of God. This is where we worship God. This is sacred space. And before we can begin to worship the sacred space, we have to set aside for sacred time. That is done by kindling the Sabbath lights, the Passover lights, at any holiday, usually candles that are being lit. I'm going to ask Linda to come up here and light the candles for us. And I'm going to read you the traditional Jewish messianic blessing that would be said. "Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who sanctified us through faith in Jesus the Messiah, the light of the world, and in his name we kindle the Passover lights." And just as the woman begins the Seder and gives light to our Passover table, so it was from the seed of the woman the Messiah came to perform his redemptive ministry and bring light to the world. Genesis 3:15 is usually read now in a Messianic Jewish home. And Genesis 3:15 said, "So the Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this, cursed are you above all livestock and wild animals. You will crawl on your belly and you will eat the dust all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and the woman and between your offspring and hers. He will crush your head and you will strike his heel." This idea of a seed, the promised seed of Messiah, is throughout the whole Old Testament. And Isaiah later picks up in 7:14, he makes a proclamation of the king. He says, "Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. A young woman, a virgin, will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel." And we see these expectations even early on. Eve, in Genesis 4, gives birth to her first son, Cain, and she says, "Behold, I have gotten a man, the Lord." And sometimes it's translated with "the Lord's help." But the Hebrew there says, "man, the Lord." So the expectation of a Messiah, of a divine deliverer, was always there. Sometimes it was hidden, sometimes the Jewish people didn't see it, but the expectation in the text was always there. And then that expectation was fulfilled. And as Matthew writes in 1:22, "All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said to the prophet. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God is with us. Now that our house is ceremoniously clean, free of leaven, and we set aside the sacred time, it's time to partake in the elements of the Seder. And the elements include the Seder plate, which has bitter herbs, sweet haroset, parsley, an egg, and a shank bone, all of which I'll explain as we get to them. And it has 4 cups of wine that we partake in. And these 4 cups of wine are taken from the 4 I wills in Exodus 6, 6 through 7. And the first cup is called the cup of sanctification. And it's the promise God makes to the Jewish people that he will bring them out from out of their burdens. Then the second cup, the cup of judgment, he says, I will rid you out of their bondage. The third cup, and most important to us, the cup of redemption, he promises that he will redeem them with an outstretched arm. And finally, the fourth cup, the cup of praise, he promises that he will take Israel to him as a people. And so, the first cup at this point would be raised by the leader of the Seder, and the following blessing would be read. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, borei pri hagafen. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, creator of the fruit of the vine. And that would be drunk by the participants. And as this cup starts the ceremony and we begin to partake in the elements, we need to wash our hands. Jewish tradition says that we need to ritually wash our hands now. And there'll be a basin with water passed around the table, and Orthodox, traditional Jewish people would now wash their hands. And a version of this was around even during Jesus' time. The servant of the house would come by and wash all the hands of the people at the table. And Jesus did the same thing, only he added a twist to this tradition. And this twist is recorded in John 13, the first 11 verses. And I'm going to read it to you. It was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter and said, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I'm going to do, but you will understand later. Peter said, no, you will never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then, Lord, said Simon Peter, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, a person who has both, who has had a bath, needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean. And you are unclean, though not every one of you. For he knew who was going to betray him. And that is why he said, not everyone was clean. So, a tradition put into the Seder by man, here is amplified by Jesus. Like all the other traditions that he butted heads with, the Pharisees, he always pointed at the heart of the issue, and he always elevated those traditions. So it's not just the outer part of the body, but the inner part of the body. And there's other times where Jesus interacts with the Pharisees when they get on the disciples' case for not washing their hands. Not only has Jesus shown the disciples what a true servant leader is, he's taken tradition of the sages and told them that it's more than just washing your hands. Go ahead and wash your hands, yes, but that's a reminder that God is doing a work in you. And he'll point to himself later and how that work is only fulfilled in the Messiah. The ultimate cleaning of our sins, the ultimate spiritual rejuvenation of our souls is done through Messiah. So now that we've washed our hands, we start to partake in the elements. And the first elements that we partake in is in parsley. Traditional Jewish blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, borei pri hagafen. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, creator of the fruits of the earth. As the wine is red in color and represents the blood of the Passover lamb, so do also the greens represent the hyssop, which was used to place the blood on the Passover lamb, on the doorpost and the lintel. The salt water represents the tears shed in Egypt, and the Red Sea, both of which were salty. So then the participants dip the parsley in salt water, and they would partake in this element. And as I read, it represents the tears that were shed in slavery. But for those of us who are believers, it can also represent the bitterness of our lives before knowing Messiah Jesus. As the Jews were slaves in the house of Pharaoh, so were we slaves to the ruler of this world in our sins. Just as the Jewish people found redemption by God alone in Egypt, so do both Jew and Gentile find redemption by God alone through Jesus the Messiah. So in remembrance of our former lives, and in remembrance of what God did for Egypt, God did it in Egypt for the Jewish people, we partake in the parsley. And now comes to another very important portion of our Seder. And this might have looked a little bit different in Jesus' times, but there's a particular piece of matzah that's placed in what's called a matzel tosh that has three pieces of matzah in it. The middle one is taken out. It's broken in half, wrapped in a white linen cloth, and placed somewhere else. It's hidden in the house. And that's going to be our to-be-continued portion of the Seder. When we get to the third cup, that will become, I'll explain what that is. It'll come out. In a traditional Jewish household, at this point, be the retelling of the story of Exodus. So a Haggadah, a little bit more intricate than this, would be taken out, and the father or the leader of the house would read the children the whole story of Exodus. And again, this is to reiterate what the sages tell us. Each person must celebrate Passover as his first Passover, as he or she has been taken out of Egypt. So the father would read the children the whole story of Exodus. And that is why sometimes in traditional households, dinner is not served until 12 in the evening. So and after the Seders, so after the whole story is read, the kids line up and they ask four questions, which is really five questions, but the tradition is called five questions. And the first question you guys probably have heard if you've ever seen the Ten Commandments. When Moses is sitting around the table and the angel of death passes, a little boy asks him, why is this night different from all other nights? And then he gives an answer. The answer in my Haggadah is, we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord redeemed us with a mighty hand. If the Holy One, blessed be He, had not taken our fathers out of Egypt, then we, our children and our grandchildren too, would be Pharaoh's slave. Again, this is to reiterate to the child that it's God alone that saved his or her forefathers. And it's because of God alone that he or she is able to celebrate this feast with her family tonight. If God had not done that for the Jewish people would still be in Egypt. A good reminder for us, if God had not sent us Messiah Jesus, we would still be in the former life of bitterness and tears. The other four questions the kids would ask. On all other nights, we eat either leavened bread or unleavened bread. Why on this night do we eat matzah, which is unleavened bread? And then the answer is, when Pharaoh let our forefathers go from Egypt, they were forced to flee in great haste. They had no time to bake their bread and could not wait for the yeast to rise. The sun which beat down on the dough as they carried out baked it into unleavened bread called matzah. This, the other question. On all other nights, we eat vegetables and herbs of all kinds. Why on this night do we eat only bitter herbs? Because our forefathers were slaves in Egypt, and their lives were made very bitter with slavery. And the final question, I'm going to skip one. On all other nights, we eat sitting up or reclining. Why on this night do we recline? And as you notice, there's some pillows here. In the traditional Jewish household, the men and the women, when they drink the cups, they would lean to the left and drink. And the reason for this, the rabbis tell us, because the reclining was a sign of a free man long ago. And since our forefathers were freed on this night, we recline at the table. To signify our freedom, our political freedom, we recline at the table. For Messianic Jewish people or for Christian Gentiles, this tradition can signify, again, the freedom that we receive from Messiah Jesus. And there's also a tradition called the four sons. In each son, there's a wise one, a naive one, a wicked one, and a young one, too young to ask. And each son asks a particular question. And again, it's to reiterate how the proper response to the Seder. The wise one asks, what are these institutions that God has given us? And then there's an answer to that. The wicked one says, what is this that you do? Thus separate himself from the Passover Seder. The naive one asks a more detailed question. And then the young one doesn't ask anything. And the idea, again, in the story is that you answer these questions to get the kids involved. This is a community, a family event. The rabbis say when a Jew prays, that he, although he prays alone, he prays in a congregation, because Orthodox Jews, they pray three times a day. So when that Orthodox Jewish person prays in the morning and says the Shema, he's praying with thousands and thousands of other Jews. So it's not just him alone. It's a community event. Hence why the kids are almost forced to be involved in every part of the Passover Seder, the Passover order. So after these two traditions are done, or set, these stories are said, we come to the second cup, and it's called the cup of plagues, or the cup of judgment. Now, the rabbis tell us that there is blessing in the cup of wine, and that the blessing is in the last drop. But because this is a cup that commemorates the destruction of Egypt and all the plagues that befell Egypt, and the Torah tells us we can't revel in the fall of our enemies, we take 10 drops of wine out of this cup. So as the leader recites all the plagues that befell Egypt, the participants take their pinky and take out 10 drops of wine for each plague. So when that cup is drunk, it's not drunk in the celebration of Egypt's demise, but drunk in the celebration of what God did for the Israelites. Now before that's drunk, there's a song that's sang, and the song is Dayenu, or it would have been enough, we would have been satisfied. And the song ranges from 15 original stanzas to over 100 stanzas today. Again, a reason why some Jewish households, the meal is not served until midnight, because it takes a while. I'm going to read a few of the stanzas, and I'm going to have you guys respond to the word Dayenu. Can you all say Dayenu? It means we would have been satisfied, or it would have been enough. If he had merely rescued us from Egypt, but had not punished the Egyptians. If he had merely punished the Egyptians, but had not destroyed their gods. If he had merely destroyed their gods, but had not slain their firstborn. If he had merely slain their firstborn, but had not given us their property. And it goes on, and it talks about the Sabbath, the Torah, the temple. But as Messianic believers, we can add a further Dayenu, knowing that God provided. If God only provided salvation through the death of the Messiah, it would have been enough. But he did much more. As Jesus said of himself, I come to give life and give it abundantly. He satisfies and gives us joy and living, which only comes from a relationship with him. So that bitterness, that former life, is taken away and made sweet. Well, sometimes the bitterness carries on to the new life, but there's hope in the world to come, where the king returns. And there is also a political redemption of us, where now we are in God's kingdom, no longer an earthly kingdom. And Rabbi Gamaliel said that at this point of the Seder, that the leader has to talk about the three essentials of Passover. And the three essentials of Passover is the Paschal lamb, the unleavened bread, and the bitter herbs. So the leader of the Seder would raise the first element, the Paschal lamb, and would read something like this. The Paschal lamb, which our forefathers ate in temple times, for what reason? Because the Holy One, blessed be He, spared the houses of our ancestors in Egypt. As it is said, you shall declare this the Paschal offering unto the Lord, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel when He struck Egypt and spared our houses. Then the people bowed down and worshiped. And this idea of the Passover lamb is carried on later and picked up by Isaiah in Isaiah 53 when he writes about the Messiah, the suffering servant. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. And then when John saw Jesus coming towards him, he declared, "Look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." Then the leader would lift up the matzah. This matzah which we eat, what is the reason for it? It is because there was not enough time for our forefathers' dough to rise when the King of Kings appeared. when the Holy One, blessed be He, redeemed them. And as the scriptures say, with the dough they had brought from Egypt, the baked cakes of unleavened bread, the dough was without yeast because they had been driven out of Egypt. Yet did not have time to prepare for food themselves. But if you notice the way the matzah is prepared today, it is very bland, it's tasteless, it's striped, and it's pierced. And Messiah said that this is the bread that represents His body and His sacrifice on the cross. So Messianic Jewish people point to Zechariah 12:10, when the prophet, writing about a great tribulation that's going to befall the Jewish people, writes how Israel looks to the Messiah and realizes that they've missed the Messiah. And here's how Zechariah puts it. And I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace and supplication. They will look on me, the one they have pierced, and they will mourn for him as one mourns for an only child, and grieve bitterly for him as one grieves for a firstborn. And David, in Psalm 22, writing about his troubles, but I think writing prophetically at the same time, in verse 16 says, they have pierced my hands and my feet. I count all my bones. The people stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. And if we come back to Isaiah, he says, but he, the suffering servant, the Messiah to come, was pierced for our transgressions, was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed. So all these things that were some added by men, some were instituted by God, Jesus, as he sat around the table in the upper room, was probably explaining these things to his disciples that they later did explained to other followers. And he made sure that they knew that all these things, all these holidays that were part of their Jewish heritage, was part of a bigger plan. These were a shadow, these were a foreshadowing on the greater things to come. As though even some of them wanted that political freedom. He said, yeah, that's coming too. But before we do that, there's a spiritual freedom that has to come. Bitter herbs. Leader lifts it up and recites, this maror, these bitter herbs which we eat, what is the reason for it? It is because the Egyptians embittered our lives and our forefathers in Egypt. As the Holy Scriptures say, they made their life bitter with hard labor, with bricks and mortar, with all kinds of work in the fields, and all of this labor being rigorous. So these things are read, and then finally the cup, second cup, the cup of judgments, is drunk. And so the blessing would be said in the second cup in remembrance of what God did to redeem the Jewish people from Egypt, is drunk. And after that is drunk, people would sing praises. And it's usually would be Psalms 113 or 114. And this is mentioned in the Gospels too, that, you know, the disciples and Jesus sang praises. So all this is done, praises are sung, the cups are drunk, and we come to a point where we eat some of the bitter herbs. And you take a matzah, you dip it in the bitter herbs, and you eat it. And again, the reminder of your forefather's slavery. And after you do that, there's a second portion that you eat, and it's called the haroset. And it's made from nuts, honey, apples, wine, cinnamon, sometimes raisin. And this is to symbolize the sweet hope. It also symbolizes the mortars the Jews had to make, the mortar the Jews had to use to make the bricks. And this is called a Hillel sandwich. A rabbi named Hillel invented it. That's why it's called the Hillel sandwich. And a little bit of bitter herbs, a little bit of sweet haroset. You make a sandwich and you eat it. So as the bitter herbs signify old life, sweet haroset signifies new life. And at this portion of the Seder, the meal will be served. After the meal is served, again, there's a blessing, there's songs. And then after the songs, this is brought out. And this is the afikoman, the bread that we put away to be continued portion of our Seder. And this is the bread after the meal that Jesus said represents his sacrifice. And this cup, the cup of redemption, he said, signifies his blood poured out for us. And the bread has a specific name. It's Adelphi Koman, as I mentioned. And the rabbis debate on what it really means, because it comes after the meal, so they say, well, it really means that which comes after, so dessert. But a more honest, literal translation of this bread, the name, is I have come. So and nobody knows where that comes from. Like, there's nothing in any history books, any Jewish annals of history, where we can trace where and how this bread came to be known as I have come. But this bread that's called I have come is the bread that Jesus broke and said signifies his sacrifice for us on the cross. And I want to invite Pastor up and we'll be led in communion, because this is where the church gets its tradition of communion. It's from this portion of the Seder. Okay. There's two more things to talk about. And one of them is Elijah's cup, or Elijah's seat. And in the time of Jesus, as it is today, the Jewish people thought that Elijah will come and announce the coming of the Messiah, or the arrival of the Messiah. And the youngest of the family in today's Jewish family, observant Jewish family, would go to the door and see if Elijah is there. If Elijah is there, the Messianic kingdom has come, and Elijah can come and partake in the Seder. But he comes at the fourth cup, which is the cup of praise. And this cup signifies that God will once again regather Israel into the land, all of the land and all of Israel. And I believe this is the cup that Jesus said he will not drink until it finds fulfillment in the kingdom of heaven. Like, as God called Israel, God got him out of Egypt, God saved Israel and the nations, and God will regather Israel. And Jesus, when he laments over Jerusalem, he's walking up to Jerusalem, he laments, saying, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, she who stones the prophets and kills those who are sent to her. He says, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. The return of Messiah is dependent on the Jewish people calling him back. They can only call him back, as Zechariah says. They can only look on him, the one whom they've pierced, and mourn if they hear the good news of Messiah. So Paul, in Romans 10, he writes, this is usually used for missions in general, but for Paul, it was Jewish missions that he was writing about. He goes, how can they hear, the Jewish people, if nobody is sent? So that's part of the mission of Chosen People Ministries, to do things like this, to empower you, to equip you, to share this, what Jewish people are going to observe in a week, to empower you to share with them. 90% of Jewish people that come to the Lord come through a gentle, loving, but bold witness of a Gentile friend. So, at this portion of the Seder, the Jewish people would, in unity, say, next year in Jerusalem, with the hopes that Messiah will come, will regather them, and that this feast will be celebrated in Jerusalem. And, I forgot to mention one thing. Elijah was supposed to be, you know, the announcer of the Messiah. The disciples in Matthew 17 at the Mount of Transfiguration ask him, well, the sages, the rabbis say that Elijah is supposed to come first. And Jesus answers them and says, yeah, they're right. And Elijah did come, and they did to him whatever they wanted. And the disciples realized he was talking about John the Baptist. So everything that even the Pharisees, and when the pastor and I were talking about it, the Pharisees sometimes get a little extra flack for the things that they've done to the law, or how they interpret it. But in Moses, he stones a man for carrying sticks on a Sabbath. That was not in the law. God approved it. Amos, when writing his prophecies, God condemns the Israelites for selling on the Sabbath. Again, not in the law of Moses. Those later sages adding that. God approved that law and said, that was my law you're breaking. Passover is a more stark example of how man-made and God instituted traditions were used by Jesus to point to the point of the Bible, was from Eden to glory. There's one continuous stream. That we fell in Egypt, if we fell in Eden, we were exiled. And now God is bringing us back. All of us, both Jew and Gentile. And I want to end this presentation the way I end my Passover Seders. And it's by reading Psalm 116. And to me, Psalm 116 is very dear and near because it kind of speaks to the journey that God led me on before I came to faith at the Passover Seder. So I'm going to ask you, all of you, just to pray silently, and I'm going to read Psalm 116, and that will conclude this presentation. I love the Lord because he's heard my appeal for mercy, because he's turned his ear to me. I will call out to him as long as I live. The ropes of death were wrapped around me, and the torments of Sheol overcame me. I encountered trouble and sorrow. Then I called on the name of the Lord and said, Lord, save me. The Lord is gracious and righteous. Our God is compassionate. The Lord guards the inexperienced. I was helpless, and he saved me. Return to your rest, O my soul, for the Lord has been good to you. For the Lord rescued me from death, my eyes from tears, and my feet from stumbling. I will walk before the Lord in the land of the living. I believed, even when I said I am severely afflicted. And in my great dismay, I said everyone's a liar. How can I repay the Lord all the good that he's done to me? I will take the cup of salvation and worship the Lord. I will fulfill my vows to the Lord in the presence of all his people. The death of his faithful ones is valuable in the Lord's sight. Lord, I am indeed your servant. I am your servant, the son of your female servant. You have loosened my bonds. I will offer you a sacrifice of thanksgiving, and I will worship the Lord. I will fulfill my vows to the Lord in the presence of all his people, in the courts of the Lord's house within you, Jerusalem. Amen. And thank you guys for having me. Thank you for allowing me to share. I appreciate your hospitality.